Hey there, you're very welcome to Season 2, Episode 5 of Triton Lake Perform. My name is Connor Smith, founder and CEO of Triton Lake, a global marketplace connecting sophisticated investors with alternative investment opportunities. In 2021, Triton Lake became the title sponsor of the Ireland men's and women's rugby sevens teams. As we head towards a new sevens season, we look forward to watching both teams compete in the Paris Olympics next summer, as well as them heading back out onto the sevens circuit kicking off this December. Triton Lake Perform explores the intersections of sport and business, looking at what both worlds can learn from each other and what are the key parts to the puzzle of high performance. Previous episodes saw us speak to a number of great guests across the sport, performance and business worlds, including Dr. Kate Kirby, Lucy Mulhall, Ronan O'Gara and Stuart Lancaster. Our next guest has a wealth of knowledge across both rugby sevens and the world of high performance. We are delighted to be joined today by ex-Irish Sevens International and the current host of the 6 o'clock show, Greg O'Shea. Greg, you're very welcome today.
Thanks very much, Connor. Good to see you again, bud.
To kick things off, maybe it'd be great to give our listeners a brief overview of your journey from your early days in Limerick to where you are today as a TV presenter, influencer and former rugby player. Just a few little things to catch up on there, but we'll dive into a few of them in more detail, but maybe give us a summary of the journey so far.
Sermon of a journey, 28 years young. It's been a mad journey, a very unique one, Connor, I think, my journey, in the fact that I kind of have two things that are very, very difficult to do in your life. One is go to the Olympics, like 0.1% of the world or whatever the stat is, and then also go on one of the biggest reality TV shows in the world and win that as well, which is like, I think it's even harder to do that than become an Olympian. So to mix all that together, and at the end of the day, I'm just a normal lad from Limerick that, like everyone else, like you throw a stone outside this window, you're going to hit someone that's the exact same as me. Went to a normal school, played rugby, close to my family, decided I wanted to do law at University of Limerick, and that was the plan. I was going to play rugby until I couldn't walk anymore, get qualified at the same time, become a solicitor, and then when I couldn't walk anymore, I'll just walk across the road and start working in a law firm. And that was going to be my plan. And there's a couple of lads in this Irish Sevens team that I played with that are doing that. So I look at them now and I'm like, wow, that was where I was going to be. And
like Jack,
Yeah. Like Jack Kelly, and he's flying it. But I'm like, I've taken such a pivot and went 180 degrees off 12 days being on a reality TV show. But the best thing I did was come back home straight off that show and go straight back into what I was doing before. So training with the Irish team, trying to get to the Olympics, that humbled me very quickly, got me straight back down to earth. I still got my law exams done. And then different opportunities allowed me to try media and radio. I was on RT2 FM for a while. Now I'm with Virgin Media doing a 6 o'clock show, and I realise that's a serious passion of mine and I really get a buzz off it, similar enough to playing rugby. It's obviously not like the actual adrenaline buzz you get from playing or winning, but it's as close to it as you can get, because every day I'm performing on a live TV show and you have to get it done. And if you mess up, everyone sees you mess up live, like a rugby match. And then fitness is always something I just can't shake off. So I'm retired from the rugby team now. So fitness is something I'm really, really obsessed with, and I'm just doing all different types of events. Like, we'll get into it later, but like, I've just finished an Ironman. That's something I really wanted to do, so tick that off the bucket list. So it's been a mad journey up to this point, and I'm still only 28, so who knows where it's going to go, but it's been a good one so far.
Absolutely. Maybe focus in on the rugby for a few minutes and share with us some of the highlights of your career from your time at Munster, and then obviously representing Ireland in the Olympics and in the sevens team. When you think back on it, what jumps out at you as the real highlights and big moments?
It's funny you say that. There's a couple of highlights that have jumped out, but the first thing that came to mind, as you were saying there, your rugby journey, where you came from, first thing that came to my mind was that I failed along the way and it ended up where I got to, and it all works out in the end. But the thing about the Irish Sevens team is everyone there is there because they failed somewhere else along the way. They haven't gone that clean route straight up to the top. And I think that's what makes the Sevens team so special, is everyone has that kind of bitterness and everyone bonds over that bitterness. And it's like us against everyone else. Not in like an angry way, but in just a like, we have to fight to prove how good we are. With me, I wanted to play for Munster in Thomond Park more than I wanted to play for Ireland. I was like, playing for Munster was like becoming God. Like, it was everything I ever wanted. I grew up watching the likes of Axel and Paul O'Connell. And then when I got a little bit older and I could kind of understand it more, like really kind of try to become like Felix Jones, his work ethic. You see him now, he just got double World Cup winner coaching staff with South Africa. So that kind of happened. But then once I got into my third year academy, I unfortunately had a really bad accident. I had a cycling accident. I was over in New York visiting an ex-girlfriend of mine and I fell off a bicycle. It was a bad start to any story following an ex-girlfriend abroad. So I had a bicycle accident and I lacerated my Achilles tendon, which is like getting a knife and cutting your Achilles in two. Like completely just bamboozled my leg. You can't even stand without your Achilles. So obviously that wasn't ideal when I was trying to become a top level rugby star. So I rang home to Munster and they, like you understand, like business, they were like, look, you're not the asset that we need you to be, but because you've done so well, we'll help you rehab. They helped me rehab for a year.
And that was surgery and everything, I presume.
Surgery, yeah. Everything, covered it all. So like props to Munster, they did what they could do for me. But if you look at it like a business, I wasn't the asset that they'd initially invested in. So unfortunately, they had to let me go because I couldn't get my leg back to where it needed to be in time to take a senior contract. So obviously at that time, my life had just like imploded. Remember now I'm like 22 maybe. And I'm like, this is all I ever wanted to do. And my world came crashing down. I moved into the sevens team. But you fast forward to when I was 24, 25 years old, a couple of years after, and it all worked out for a reason because I got to go into the sevens team, which means I got to go to the Olympics, which also meant I had the spare time to go to do that reality TV show, which now gave me the opportunity to become a TV presenter.
None of which would have happened if you hadn't fallen off the bike, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So at the time you think your world is falling apart, but I genuinely believe that everything happens for a reason and you're going in the path you're supposed to go on.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you say about the leg getting back where it needed to. One of the things I was going to ask was around your sprinting. And I know you competed at high level, at a youth level from a sprinting perspective. Mm. I guess two questions. How did that feed into your rugby career? Was it all about pace, really? And were you able to get back the pace to where it was after the Achilles rehab as well?
So, yeah, I competed in the Youth Olympics in 2011 as a sprinter. It was in a place called Trabzon in Turkey. I actually did okay. I ran 10.86, I think, for 100 metres at 16 years old. So I was the fast guy in school. Like, do you remember back to watching school's rugby, Connor, and you see the fast guy would get the ball, run out to the sideline, down and the touchline, kind of like the way Terry Kennedy plays sevens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Terry Kennedy's like a cheat code. He's on another level of speed. Yeah. I was like that at a younger level.
Yeah.
So that's was what I used to kind of help my team, and that's how I played my rugby. But then, funnily enough, when I got into the Munster Academy, my speed got me into the Munster Academy and my try-scoring ability. But because I'd relied so heavily on my speed, when I got into the Munster Academy, I had no skills. And I remember it so vividly. I went in one day to academy training, and I could barely pass off my left
hand. That was kind of my question. Was it all about this lad has pace, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, what else do we need around this?
Yeah. Exactly. So Munster were like, oh my God, this guy has no skills. I couldn't kick the ball. I could barely pass the ball off my left, but I was fast and I could score tries.
Yeah.
So it took me a couple of years and I obviously figured it out. I just completely honed in on it and all I could do was extras. Kind of like Billy Dardis, the captain of the Irish Sevens team. He's nonstop doing extras. That's what I was like coming up through school and into Munster Academy. So it paid off. And then I kind of really used that speed then to get into the Munster Academy. But then when I went into the Sevens team, I obviously lost it because of that injury I had, because of that lacerated that Achilles tendon. So I never really got back to where I needed to be speed-wise. Say if I was 100% before I got that injury and I was up there with the likes of Terry Kennedy and Jordan Conroy, I'm down at like a normal level, like 75%, like, do you know what I mean? My speed I used to be. So I moved into kind of a more playmaker role. I played at out half for the Olympic team when we qualified, and at the Olympics I played at out half, which is still decent. Like, I'm in the middle of the bunch now, so I can't complain. I got to where I wanted to get this, so it all worked out in the end, thank God.
Yeah, no, and obviously got back, got to the sevens, got to the Olympics, great experience, and then you decided to transition away from it, pretty much after the Olympics, right?
Yeah.
What drove that? I mean, obviously you had some other opportunities coming in.
Mm.
Obviously the career prospects and earning prospects in the sevens is a bit different as well, right? And you probably needed other stuff, but I guess you'd seen enough to know that there was a bigger opportunity for Greg O'Shea outside of that world, no matter how much you liked it.
Yeah, you're right. Well, to be honest, kind of the overarching theme is that I didn't really want to retire because I love fitness. I love hanging out with the lads, and at the top elite level, to be playing for your country with your friends, going to the Olympics, what more could you want? I say sevens rugby is like the best part-time job for like an early 20-year-old woman or man, because you're just training at an elite level, you're getting a bit of money. But the fact of the matter was, I and a couple of other lads retired after the Tokyo Olympics. There was about five of us that retired and five people that were like arguably starters or in the top 12 or the top squad. And we retired because the Olympics is the pinnacle of sport. Like, you're not going to get tired in the Olympics in any sport. Everyone knows. You go to any corner of the world, everyone knows what the Olympics is. We got there. Now, we didn't perform as we wanted to, but we still got there. And as you mentioned, we weren't getting paid that much. So a lot of us kind of decided, you know what, we'll get to the Olympics, we'll get through it, and then we'll move on from there. And that's just the way it happened. Now, the boys have gone up a little bit money since then, and it's great, and they're all flying it, and the team's probably actually better now, and there's better players in there. And but it's like, it's a progression, and people like you have come in Triton Lake and helped out the team, the men's and the women's, for guys to have the stability to train harder, to train better. And I think the lads are in a better position now, and the women, to actually go on and maybe win the Olympics or compete for a medal for sure. So it's just, we were part of the development, and we all look back fondly being like, we helped create this team and got it onto the World Series, got it competing at an Olympic stage. And we can look back fondly and know that we can walk around and hold our heads high.
Absolutely. Well deserved as well. And as you look back, I guess now that you have transitioned away, what are some of the key lessons or experiences maybe that you take from that? I mean, obviously, you've spoken about the coming back from the injury, the everyone failing along the way. So resilience is one, right? Yeah. But what else are the key bits that
stand to me that moved me into the business world or my media world? Yeah, resilience is definitely one, and adapting. Because I remember I talked about my Achilles surgery. I had to adapt from being the fast guy and learn new skills, move into a playmaker role. So it was like learning on the move in a high pressured environment and realizing I didn't have the skills I once had. I need to improve. So that, I've really taken that on. I don't have any kids, but if I ended up having kids, I would really want them to play a team sport, maybe not rugby, but whatever team sport they wanted to play, at least try it. Because I think it teaches you so much that you can bring into the rest of life. It teaches you discipline, it teaches you resilience, it teaches you work ethic, it teaches you how to lose, it teaches you how to win, which is also a big thing as well, not shoving winning in someone's face. There's also like a demeanor to winning. Organization is probably the biggest thing I've taken from it. Like, for instance, now that I'm in kind of what I do now for a living, which is a mixture of media and my fitness app and different bits and bobs of influencing is what you call it, even though I don't like to call myself an influencer. I have a lot of moving plates, a lot of spinning plates, so I really have to be organized. And I will literally get my bag ready the night before, like I used to do for training. So like when I was back in training, you'd have your boots, you'd have your gear, you'd have your food, you'd have whatever you needed. Now, before getting up or going to bed to get up the next day, I'll line out exactly what I need, whatever shoes I'm wearing, whatever clothes I'm wearing, whatever I'm having for breakfast. I'll know exactly what I'm doing and where I'm going. And that's just something I've taken from my sporting world.
Mm. And also the discipline and structure around
it. Discipline and structure and organization. Yeah. And also the biggest thing, which I really miss from rugby, is the team bonding and the teamwork. And I really struggled with that initially when I retired, because I went from being in a dressing room for 10 years, always having the lads to rely on. If you have a bad game, you might be okay because the other lads might have a good game, you might still get the win. When you're completely by yourself, if you have a bad day, you're not going to succeed. You're going to have a failure of a day. You're not going to progress. You might learn from that, but the thing is, I really struggled without having a team around me. So when I finally got into my own TV show, the 6 o'clock show on Virgin Media, and I have a co-presenter in Karen Costa, I have a producer, I have a floor manager, I have a director, I have a research team, I'm like, oh, I have a team around me again. And I really kind of stood back up and I felt more powerful, and I felt like I can help these people out because they're helping me out, and we all are working towards one goal. So that's one thing I really missed that I've taken from rugby. Is like, form your team and be working towards a common goal.
Mm, okay. Obviously, you're known for your presence on social media, especially after Love Island. We won't spend too long. We won't spend too long on this, I promise, Greg.
You have
right?
to mention, I suppose.
But how do you manage, or how did you manage fame and social media alongside what you were trying to do in terms of sport and academia with the law degree as well?
Yeah, I suppose you could say I didn't really manage it, Connor, to be honest. I think the Love Island reality TV world chewed me up and spit me back out again, because I wasn't willing to play by their rules. And kind of looking back now, 4 years later, it's been 4 years since I went on that show, which is mad. I went on the show and I went on for the smallest amount of time a winner has ever gone on, 12 days, won the show, and I came straight back home to Ireland and went straight back into what I was doing. I didn't go to one event after the show. I didn't keep dating the girl. We stopped dating straight away. And I went, okay, that was great. That was a good experience in my off season, but I have shit going on back home. Apologies for cursing, but I was like, I have a life before this. The reason I got onto the show is because of the life I had before. I'm not just going to throw that all away for one show. No, it's great, great crack that I won it. But I came back home and that reality TV world didn't appreciate that at all.
Were they constantly inviting you to come to stuff, or?
They were initially for the first few weeks, but you're expected to go.
They were like, you have such and such on this day.
Yeah, exactly. But because they didn't have me under contract, you kind of can do what you want, but it's the unwritten rule that you show up as the winner of the show and you promote the show and you do the bits in London, and you're supposed to nearly move to London or Manchester and be that it couple. But I went completely against the grain. I came back home. And I think that's why I'm so patriotic about Ireland, and I love the Irish people. It's because they really took care of me. They understood what I was doing, understood I was doing university. I was trying to go to the Olympics with the sevens team. Like, within two or three people, you could probably link a friend of mine or a sister, or everyone kind of understood what I was doing. But the English media, like, killed me. Like, I got quote-unquote cancelled. Like, at one point, I had 1.7 million followers. I'm now down at 800 and something thousand. So that's over 800,000 people went onto their phone and went through the process of unfollowing me. Like, 800,000 people. That's more, that's nearly the population of Dublin. What, 1 million people in Dublin? So, like, think about that. Like, think about the mental health of that and trying to deal with it. And I see some people complaining they lost one or two followers. I'm like, think of the scale that I'm working on here. But the beauty of it is, it's giving me more empathy now towards people that are struggling with that kind of issue, or that want a helping hand in that world, or people that or won't even try Love Island. Like, I've had a lot of people come on to me asking, should I try it? And I'm like, just so you know, I was very naive as to the negatives of it. This will happen to me. And I can kind of lay out the lie of the land for them. So I've taken a lot of learnings from it. But as you said, how did you deal with the fame? I don't think I'd handle the fame at all. I think the fame chewed me up, spit me out, and I learned from it. And now I've kind of built myself back up, and I've gotten closer to the people that I could trust. People like you, Connor, Billy Dardis, the captain, my family, the lads, my closest friends. One of the things that I'm really happy with is the friend group I have now are still the exact same friend group I had 5 years ago before going on the show. So that's really stood to me. But it was more of a learning curve, and I probably wish I handled it a little bit better. I had like a media manager at the time, but I didn't. And look, I'm still sitting here fighting.
Still sitting. And as you said, these things happen for a reason as well, right? Maybe that's the way it was supposed to go.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, maybe let's step back into high performance again. Could you share some insights into your training regime and mental preparation that go into how you perform your best, both when you were playing rugby and now when you're doing extreme sports like the Ironman?
Yeah. The biggest thing for me when it comes to high performance or trying to succeed at anything, whether it's sport or whether it's work or whatever you're trying to do next, of a million and one things I'm trying to do, I always bring it back to what's your why. Like, why are you doing something? And you see here on my arm, I have a tattoo of a question mark. I always come back, if I'm finding I'm getting a bit lost, a bit wayward, I'm like, what's my why? Why am I doing something? Why am I here? And for instance, when I retired from rugby, I really struggled with what's my why? Why am I getting up in the morning? I've no reason, no purpose to get up in there. I really struggled with that. And it got to a really weird place that I had to like literally sit down at one stage and write down on a piece of paper, what's my why, what I want to be doing. And it literally came down to, I love fitness, so I'm going to create something to do with fitness. I love presenting, it gives me a buzz, like I spoke about earlier. And I love my family and my friends. So they're going to be my three pillars. Fitness, if you fast forward 2 years later, I have a fitness app called Better. I'm picking off different endurance events that's really challenging me in that world. Like, I just did an Ironman. I did a leg of the Tour de France. I did UTMB around Mont Blanc. That thing really gives me a purpose and a reason to get up and stay fit and put out good content to help people stay healthy and get fit. And presenting, I kept knocking on doors, sending emails, sending messages, asking people to give me an opportunity. Finally, Virgin Media gave me an opportunity. I did some of the sporadic shows here and there. Then they actually gave me a presenting role. That worked out. And I've never been closer to my family and friends, which is also a major part of life. That is something you have to do, is reach out to friends, reach out to family and make time for them as well. So that's kind of my biggest thing, was watch your why, and then you kind of do baby steps from there. All right.
And then when you have your why and you break that down into the steps to get there, I guess, do you have any rituals or routines? You touched earlier on packing your bag for the day. That's obviously was one of them, right?
Yeah.
Anything else that you always do, or does it depend on what the next peak is that you're going to climb?
It's something that I've always done, even back to when I was in college and in the academy and moving on through my life, is, and it started writing at longhand. So I had this big whiteboard in my room and I'd draw seven lines in it, and I'd have it Monday to Sunday, and I'd have all the hours of the day, and I could tell you every hour of the day for the week where I would be and what I'd be doing. And everything would be in there. It might be cooking dinner, it might be resting, it might be working out, it might be going to lectures, having meetings, whatever it is. But every hour was accounted for. So I knew where I was going and what I was doing, and I had a focus. And I even brought it as far as, because I was spinning the plates of training and law and doing everything. I was like, people need to know what I'm doing, because if I don't show up to that lecturer is going to think I'm lazy, but actually I'm away training with the Munster senior team. But if I miss a training session, everyone needs to know what's going on. So I'd take a photo of the whiteboard that I've written out, and I would send it to the director of rugby at Munster. I'd send it to my academy manager, and I'd send it to the head of law, and I'd send it to all my lecturers in one big email, so everyone would know what I'm doing, where I'm going. So there's no excuses. Greg's not being lazy. Greg's, this is where he is and this is what he's doing, and I've told you this is what I'm doing. And obviously then I'd be trying to fit everything in. So,
but it's organization again, is the key to it, right? And exactly. Communication.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Communication, organization. You understand that from building a business. Yeah. Everyone needs to know what you're doing and where you're going. Otherwise, I find if I don't have something planned out, that I just end up losing the day. I end up doing nothing. Once it's written down, if it's written down, it's happening. It's a non-negotiable that it's happening. So I really find that helps me. Once it's written, it's like I have a boss telling me I have to do it, even though it's just me, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. We've talked a lot about the effort that has to go in, and the dedication and the resilience and the training and everything else. Talk to us a small bit about rest and recovery and how important that is, because with a busy schedule, it can be hard to fit that bit in sometimes, right? But it's key. I remember I was talking to, I think it was Terry recently, and he was saying he'd met you and you had your first day off from training in 3 months or something like that. Maybe it's worse than that, right?
Yeah.
But something like that. I mean, surely you need to have room for recovery in there.
Yeah, that was when I met Terry. He met me in the height of training for the Ironman, which is the full distance Ironman, which you're not really allowed any days off, because there's three different disciplines, swimming, cycling and running. So because you've been in the pool that day, it means you're somewhat recovered to go running the next day, because it's different pressure on your joints, but that's a different fitness regime. But when it comes to rest and recovery, I have always found it quite hard, and I was one of those guys that got constantly injured training, because I'd always think I could do more and I'd always do extras, or I think I could go off 5 hours sleep, which is so silly. At the end of the day, your body is like a tool, and you have to fuel it with the right nutrients and the right sleep and the right hydration and everything to make it work. Why would you drive a car that's breaking down or that has one flat wheel, or you put in a bad quality fuel, or you've no oil in it, and then you're going to expect your car to drive you down the road? It's like, it's not going to move. You have to think of your body like that. And I wish I learned this back when I was playing or when I was younger, because I honestly would think I could go in and train with the Munster senior team at 5 hours sleep and I'd tear my hamstring. I wouldn't understand why. And my father would say to me, well, are you sleeping? And I'd be like, yeah, sure, whatever, Dad. I just didn't listen to him. And now that I've gotten older and I've retired, I'm much better at it. Luckily, I kind of started getting better at it just before the Olympics, and I really got myself together and got myself in a good enough position. But now I'm even 10 times better than I was when I was getting ready for the Olympics. And I can see you have one on your wrist there. We both have the Whoop. I think this is one of the best devices going, and I'm not an ambassador for them. I just think it's incredible for staying on top of what your body is trying to tell you, because you might be hard-headed like me, Connor, where you'll try and like grit through things and just be a strong, tough person. But if the Whoop's telling you that you haven't been recovered for the last 3 days, you need to prioritize your sleep. Because if you don't prioritize your sleep, then your company's going to start failing, because you're not going to be the right person for the job at the time, because you might be a bit foggy in the brain, you mightn't feel your best, you might be grouchy in a meeting, you might not see an opportunity. So I've kind of realized that I have to prioritize my sleep is first and foremost. And then I've kind of four other things. I have five total checklists that I make sure I have to be ticking off. First one is sleep, minimum 8 hours. Second one is good quality food. So it'd be a lot of like colors, so like vegetables and fruits and nuts and oats and things like that. Try and stay away from processed foods. Next one is hydration. So you got to be drinking water. It's really simple, but people don't do it. I also have a lot of electrolyte tablets just to kind of replenish the salts. Next one after that is stress management. So what do I do for stress management? My thing is at least twice a week, I try and get into a sauna for 20 to 30 minutes. That's just my thing away from the world. You can't have a phone in there. You have to shut down. And the other one after that is exercise. Like, exercise is a non-negotiable for me. I think if you could put the benefits of exercise, both mental and physical, if you could put it in a pill form, you wouldn't be able to stock it on the shelves. It would be completely sold out across the world. It's just people are too lazy to get up off their arse and go do something. And I'm not saying go do an Ironman like me. I'm a bit nuts. I'm saying get up and go walk down to the end of the road and come back. And then you might feel better the next day. You might jog down to the end of the road and come back, or go do a yoga class, whatever it is. I think exercise is like a non-negotiable when it comes to trying to be successful in any other area. I presume you'd agree with that, because I know you're into your fitness as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And on the same theme, tell us a bit about the Better with Greg app, and what was the inspiration for that, and what can users expect from it in terms of fitness and wellness? It probably covers the 5 points you just talked about, I guess,
well,
right?
I kind of wanted to make a platform where I could give people an insight into how to start to make yourself a little bit better. And that's why it's called better. And then I just dropped the second E just to try and make it look cool.
To be trendy.
I actually copied, is it Chris Hemsworth or Liam Hemsworth?
What are the Hemsworths?
One of them. Yeah. He has a fitness company called Center and he dropped the second E. Okay. So I kind of took inspiration off him. But you know what, Connor? It's hard to build a business. I might have to pick your brain off the back of this. It's great in the sense that it's a platform that you train live with me is the biggest thing about it. Is people really struggle to how to start exercise and where to go. That's why I was saying just do something small, but people still don't even know what to do. So I'm like, I will do everything for you. I will come up with the sessions. All you have to do is turn on your laptop or turn on your phone and I will be on the other side of the camera and I'm telling you exactly what to do. And not only am I telling you what to do, I'm more than a PT, I'm doing it with you. Like if I'm telling you to do 10 squats, I'm doing 10 squats as well. And that's the motivation side of it. I'm like, we're all in this together. I'm up, I'm telling you what to do. So it's going to get people moving again. They're all only 30 minutes long. It's a mixture of bodyweight exercises, so it's not too taxing. And then I kind of put up wellness tips and nutrition tips and things like that. But like, I've only created a little small community, which I'm really obsessed with. It's not a small little community.
The tribe.
I'll have to speak to you about how to grow that and how to scale that. But at the moment, it's really good. And it's just kind of like keeps me motivated as well to know that I'm helping people, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. And we touched on it there and a few minutes ago in terms of the mental aspect. And, you know, obviously you've been very vocal in recent years about your own mental health. Has sport played a big part in maintaining a positive frame of mind and overcoming those challenges?
Yeah, sport and just fitness in general. Yeah. I can't bring it back to one of those five pillars. Exercise. If I don't exercise, I'm honestly a terrible person to be around. I'm just so grumpy, so stressed. I'm really narky. I'll get annoyed at the smallest things. And I just know if I train, it just helps me to feel like I'm not worthless. I know it sounds really dramatic, but it feels like I've achieved something. If you do a hard workout, it reduces anxiety because you've put your body under such strain that it then releases certain hormones to reduce your anxiety because you put it under a level of stress. It's counteracting that stress. So if your body gets more stressed, like through work throughout the day, it doesn't reach that same level of cortisol. So I use it for that reason as well. But it always just comes back to like overall wellness for me. And I really had that when I was playing sport. Right, so I had to kind of like adapt myself when I retired and kind of make it a middle focus of my life. So everything starts with that. Health is your wealth and then everything else branches out from it, if you know what I mean. So that's kind of how I focus it now. And if I don't train for a couple of days or don't even like focus on my diet or if I have a few pints,
I feel it a couple of days later.
Yeah. But then again, we're not soldiers. I'm not a professional athlete anymore. So you're allowed to enjoy yourself. But it's just if you go off track, just bring yourself back on.
Yeah. Since retiring from rugby, obviously you've adventured into the world of TV. Maybe share some of your experiences and the challenges you've faced in this new career.
Yeah, it's a whole new world for me now, this media world. And even though I've kind of been doing it sporadically for 3 years, I've kind of only had a full-time role for the last year, just under a year actually. And it's been a slap in the face and it's quite humbled me in the sense that I went from a sport and a job that I knew, like that I was, say, a master at 10 years. They always talk about that, 10,000 hours, 10 years, and now I'm a complete newbie again. So I was just like a sponge. I know Tommy Bowe is very similar to like that when he went into Virgin Media and started presenting. We're just asking questions and like trying to take everything I can off Karen Koster, who's my co-presenter, or off Grana Shoga, who comes in, or off the directors, and I'm asking questions. I'm just bringing in all the information I can. And then after each show, I'll ask, what can I have done better? Are you happy with that? And it's very similar to what I did in sport, but I'm like analysing my show. And it's funny, the directors and the producers in Virgin Media and other places I've worked, they say they love working with ex-sports people because they can take criticism so well. They love being criticised because it's somewhere I can work on.
Whereas there's no ego to it, I guess, right?
There's no ego to it because you're always looking to your coaches for where can I get better so I can get into the team next week. So you apply that same mindset to the media world I'm in now. So I'm always looking to get better. Now I'm still very, very new and I'm still making mistakes and there's a million and one things going on, but that's great. And I love the challenge and it's given me that adrenaline buzz that I'm chasing the whole time of performing and like working as a team. So I am loving it. And I'm interviewing some amazing people. Like the other day, I interviewed former President Mary Robinson. Like, when am Greg O'Shea from Limerick ever going to interview Mary Robinson? Like, do you know what I mean? I just thought it was one of the most amazing things. It's the most nervous I've been in a long time because she just came on looking so elegant and so proper. And we were speaking about what's going on in the Middle East and in Ukraine. And I was like, wow, I am so out of my depth here. Like, do you know what I mean? But it's, I think it's a bit of fake it till you make it as well. Yeah. Everyone had to do their first interview at some time. Like, do you know what I mean?
So,
not that that was my first one, but that was my first proper big one with someone that's done so much in the world. And then the other day we had Gokwan in. Like, what a change of gear.
Contrast,
going from Mary Robinson to Gokwan. And I'm like, this is just an amazing world to be in and meeting some incredible people. But I'm still learning every day and hopefully I can keep improving.
Keep improving, absolutely. And, you know, speaking of being out of your depth, obviously you've been actively pushing your boundaries by taking part in some very extreme sports and physical challenges. What drives that? Is there something that always pushes you to want to do something new that you haven't done before and prove you can do it to yourself? Or what is the driver for it?
Yeah.
Or is it that you're just a bit crazy, like you
said? It's a great question, Connor. I've been trying to figure out what it is that keeps me doing these endurance events. So in the last year, in 6 months, I did a leg of the Tour de France. I did a UTMB marathon trail run around Mont Blanc. And then I did a full Ironman in 6 months. And it's like, I have thought of, like, what is driving me here? And I think it's something that I have to pick apart myself. But if I'm being brutally honest, it's probably an aspect of what I've said before. Obviously, fitness is a big part of my life and keeping yourself together. And that helps you be successful in other areas. But I've gone another step on from that. I'm doing full Ironmans, which isn't enjoyable. It's like touching on self-torture, like training for a full Ironman. I think it's a bit of proving myself. If I had to, but I definitely have to unpick it a little bit more. But I definitely think that, like, a lot more of the sevens ads as well, that when they retire, they're not going to be able to, like, forget about that part of their lives. And you always have to feed that dog. And I think I've always been trying to prove myself the whole way along. So in the academy, I obviously got injured, so I wasn't good enough. So I got dropped by them. They went into the sevens team and I'm trying to compete to get in onto the wing or into the centre, but I'm not fast enough anymore. So I'm competing to get into the out half position. But then Anthony Eddy didn't actually pick me initially for the Olympic squad. So I'm being told I'm not good enough again. And then through one of the boys getting injured, I got a travelling reserve spot, ended up training really well, got myself into the starting position and just all the way along. And then I went on Love Island, won that, came back home. And then because I didn't stay in London, I'm getting cancelled by everyone in the UK. They're telling me I'm not good enough. I'm getting unfollowed by 800,000 people. At the time, my girlfriend broke up with me as well. I've no job because I've quit rugby. So I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to go next. There's people telling me no when I'm asking for media jobs. So I'm getting told no all the time. And I'm not saying, wow, 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 oh, poor Greg, because I have had a very good life and very grateful for it. But if you kind of decipher it a little bit more, I've been getting rejected the whole way along my life and told I'm not good enough. So I think deep down, and I'm not sure, I'll probably have to go speak to a therapist about it, that I'm doing these really hard events to prove to myself that I am good enough to do it and to prove to the world that I am the man I say I am, and I do have something to me, and I'm not just this Love Island guy and a guy that just happened to go to the Olympics because he was part of a really good rugby team. I've gone and done some of the hardest events in the world, and if you're going to look at me, you're going to go, okay, that is a person that has discipline, that has a bit to him, that has a bit of character, and he's not just a typical Love Island guy. Because I could walk down the street and, like, 10 people are going to go, oh, Greg O'Shea from Love Island. Might as well turn my birth cert to Greg O'Shea from Love Island.
Yeah.
So I think there's a bit of that, and I'm proving myself and proving my worth and proving that there's a lot more to me than just what people think on the surface.
No, exactly. And what's next? Are there any more exciting projects or challenges around the corner you can share with us?
A big goal for me, I think, is actually promoting the sport that we love, promoting rugby sevens. So I think I want to put a lot of effort into trying to promote that, and I don't know how I'm going to do it, speak to people in world rugby, but just I think what we have there in sevens rugby is such a beautiful, entertaining sport. I know a lot of people that have come along, like friends and family that wouldn't initially been a rugby fan, they love it. So I think we need to get that out there a little bit more, and the format's changing next year. They're doing more of an entertainment kind of vibe, like you go to an NFL game or an NBA game, you want sevens to be, you go to a sevens event. So that's a big goal of mine, is kind of promote how awesome I think that sport is, and the women's side and the men's side, and get more people playing, because it's more accessible than 15s rugby as well.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a goal of mine, and hopefully use my skills from TV into that, and my social media skills as well. So we'll see. That's kind of one big thing that I'm kind of playing with. Also, I think I really want to try a 100-mile race is the next thing I want to kind of work towards. So that's something that it's kind of in the back of my head, but that's like a big, big goal. That's like a couple of years. You can't just go into doing that. So that's kind of one thing I've seen, because I saw some people when I was out doing the UTMB Mount Blanc run doing it, and it's like the level of elation they had getting over the line. I just was like, that's so beautiful to see. Like they're crying, and the amount of work they put in to complete 100 miles, like 170 something kilometers. So I think down the line that's something I would like to try.
And what's that in terms of time? How long does it take someone to run that? It must be like 24 hours or something, right?
It's like you've 46 hours.
46 hours to complete.
So,
it. Okay.
So
the training for that would be way tougher even than the Ironman, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a different type of training.
Well,
though,
it's a different type of training. Yeah, different disciplines, where this is just pure running around a trail around mountains and stuff, where Ironman's a different discipline. So I'm thinking that's one thing I want to do. But the other thing that I'm kind of toying with as well, so it's kind of one way or the other, because you can't do both. The other one is trying to do a sub 3 hour marathon. That's kind of a one. But like, obviously that's running fast.
Yeah.
The other one's running really slow for a long period of time. They're what I'm toying with right now. I'll have to come back to you on what I'm going to do, but we'll see. That's kind of what I'm playing with at the moment.
Okay. And then as we wrap up, can you give us one piece of advice maybe that you'd give to someone who's looking to establish themselves as a leader in a high-performance environment?
Oh, health is your wealth. I've said it already. I was like, if you don't have yourself together and have your life in order, there's no point you trying to build a business or trying to become a high-performing business, because you don't even have yourself together. So get yourself together first, and then the follow-on from that is what's your why, and then work on from that.
Perfect. That's it for today, I think, Greg. Thanks very much for coming in. Enjoyed the chat as always.
Yeah, it was great, Connor. Thanks a million, sir.
No worries. Greg, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really interesting and insightful to hear about your career and your development from a young age on and off the pitch. We're looking forward to seeing you continue on what will no doubt be an exciting journey over the next few years, and we wish you all the best. So that's all for episode 5 of season 2 of Triton Lake Perform. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Stay tuned as we look forward to chatting to more fantastic guests as our season draws to a close.